and would be locked with Russia, I think, whether there was any communism in the world or not. There are many reasons for it. Now, on the second problem, it's obvious that we have a defense problem. On the first, the arms don't do the trick. So that I'm not saying that you disarm. I'm saying that if you think you can solve the first problem, the mouse method, with arms, then we're in for rough sledding because it won't solve it. On the contrary, one trouble we're having with our allies in Europe at the moment is their fear that the arms program will so squeeze the economic condition of the people as to cause political instability, infiltration, and even communism.
You think we're in any danger of losing the support of Europe, is
it? Oh, certainly. There's never been a time since the Atlantic Pact was signed that the people of Western Europe as a whole said, that's it, that's what we back.
Well, we've got to, I think, to real funding. Let's get back to our fundamental issue. And they, where we are very much divided, we feel that we're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars and feeding everybody, giving a higher standard of living, will do away with the Russian menace.
No, I wouldn't try to say it that way.
Well, you certainly came very close to that. I think as far as that's concerned, we are facing here just the very opposite. We are facing here a military menace. I think the communist powers, with their 4 million soldiers in Russia, their 4 million soldiers in China, are aiming through infiltration and propaganda, through a casual biting off this group and biting off that group, are aiming bit by bit at trying to win over the world by the force of arms or the threat of arms. It is their psychological threat out of arms or of armed threats in many cases. That we, whether we find it in Korea, whether we find it in China, whether we find it in Indochina, they're relying upon arms. And in no cases...
Alone?
Arms plus infiltration. They use all tactics. Psychological warfare. This is exactly as...
And what's the psychological warfare based on? Why is it successful?
Or
is
the utopia trying to say...
I really must object again to calling a square meal utopia. I think that's a fundamental American vice.
All right, let's put it this way. If you
will
join the communist party, if you just have a communist, everything, you'll have enough to eat. You'll have everything you want. As a matter of fact,
well, most
I think
people,
the fact
including
is also,
Americans, want enough to eat. So I don't think you should call that utopia.
Well, on the other hand, what I'm saying is
if so, we're in utopia now.
Well, exactly. And we have not got it here by simply by a handout state. We've had it here by hard work and self-reliance.
And some of these people are working very hard.
But as far as what we're trying to do is to aid them consistently. On the other hand, it is not the duty of American or the American taxpayer to subsidize 400 million Hindus.
May I agree? I think any effort to solve this problem by simply calling out the American taxpayer is doomed to failure. And this is not an American problem. It's a world problem.
How do you go about it?
Well, it'll have to be solved by many peoples and cooperation. It can't be solved by America.
Would you care to spell out some of the details?
Well, I think very obviously the Charter of the United Nations pretty nearly spells it out, and we never have invoked that part of the Charter effectively. When the United Nations was set up, it was set up not only to with a Security Council, but with an Economic and Social Council. And if you look at the budget for the past 5 years, you'll see that what we've spent on the Economic and Social Council doesn't amount to much in terms of the problem that it was designed to cope with. I don't know whether it's too late to use the United Nations, because the United Nations has lost a lot of prestige in most of the world since Korea.
Certainly the United Nations has lost a lot of prestige, and why? Because it was never able to get together on a policy. And where the United Nations recently have done their best to sabotage the policy, our Far Eastern policy, in which they were delighted to join in as long as it seemed to be winning. Therefore, the very fact that the United Nations has failed in its primary mission of maintaining peace and opposing aggression, I'm very dubious about having over to the United Nations, without any control by Americans, $500 billion or some figure that you're talking about.
And you're opposed to pooling our resources with the resources of other nations and putting the pool under the authority of a group representing everybody, including us.
I certainly am. As long as they're going to spend, we are going to give the principal amount of money.
I take it you know the reason why we would be giving the most money, because we have the most.
Yes, but we'll be...
What if we gave our share?
I still would say that we will give no more than our share unless we have an adequate control of how it's done. You know again.
I don't
want
to give more than our share on any basis.
And you know exactly what has been done here when we have been pouring money into these countries, whether in Indonesia or whether into India recently. And through a World Bank, that's an international organization, we've just given the India loan of some $265 million. World Bank. But our money primarily. And that hasn't affected the situation there at all.
Well, you see, I'm in hearty agreement with you that this is not the way to cope with this problem. I don't think the Santa Claus stuff at Washington is the way to cope with this.
Well, that is the whole thing. In other words, that my fundamental position is we are faced with a military problem that must be answered with a military way. Then, in the other way, we have certainly shown our willingness to cooperate with all peoples and trying to make them self-sustaining and self-reliant. But until such a way you can show that giving them or lending them so many billion is going to aid them to be self-sustaining and self-reliant, then I think it's perfectly...
Well, you see, I don't think this is primarily a moral issue. I think many Americans have had their feelings hurt because they've given a lot of money, of their money, and we're rather heavily taxed at the moment, and feel that somehow people are not very grateful. And it's true, they're not very grateful. And the reason they're not very grateful is that it's a very difficult posture for another people to have to come to the capital of one country and beg help. I don't think a good program can be based on that. I think it would have to be based on the pooled resources of many countries.
How do you think the countries you're talking about, these underprivileged countries, would respond to that kind of program?
I think it would be the first time in 5 years that an American statement would really ring around the world. I think they've been wondering what's gone wrong, because we haven't been looking to them the way they thought Americans look. This is Wendell Willkie's point.
You think it would ring in China and in India?
If they heard about it. Now, they might be more or less effectually prevented from hearing.
Well, I very much doubt it would have any effect whatsoever. As far as that's concerned, you can see in which the Marshall Plan, which was unilateral but still was trying to aid Europe, how that was suppressed and not allowed to act behind the curtain. That I think that any international organization, under any auspices of truly international organization, not dominated by Russia, would not be permitted to act in China.
I don't believe that answers Mr. McBurney's question. How the ordinary Chinese would react to such a declaration? How do you think they would react?
That's a different question from whether it would be admitted.
He would react if he was allowed to hear about it. If he'd hear about it in such a way, this is another an attempt of Wall Street to dominate the world. The same way that even Mr. Nehru would be deeply suspicious, and the Indian peasants would be deeply suspicious, that is simply another way in which America is now utilizing a world organization to try to secure control over our beloved India.
Well, I take it at this point, if you're not allowed to enter China, you enter the countries that do allow you to enter. Get on with the job.
Yes, and the whole point of it is that the place of the people who are fighting us are the places where your organization do no good whatsoever. India's not fighting us. And as a matter of fact...
I'm not proposing an international pool starving merely because they're fighting us. I'm proposing that until we cope with that problem, you have continual disorder in one form or another. I think one of the forms it'll take will be war.
Well, now, might it not be possible that we would pour our resources into communist-dominated countries and they would accept it and turn against us, and we serve only to strengthen the enemy?
I think it would enormously strengthen our position in the world, even militarily, if we offered to put our share and I'd like to get away from this handout stuff we're going in for, and no more, into a common pool to be used in whatever country would accept it. Now you are, if I understand you are saying, supposing a communist country did accept,
that's right,
I would be perfectly content to leave it to the international authority what to do. Perfectly content. Because actually, I think our position would be vastly strengthened.
But the government thinks they won't accept it.
I inclined to agree with Mr. McGovern.
First of all, they wouldn't accept at all. And I'm convinced, and secondly, that if by some miracle they did accept, they would utilize it in such a way as to tend to strengthen themselves and not ours. In other words,
Who's ours?
I am an American. Therefore, when I say our, I mean we.
But Americans. You're also a human being. What about the pool in which you'd have a stake?
And which we would have, in which I'd supply the money and have no control over it. No.
You'd supply some of the money and have some of the control.
Yes, but in proportion here, no. I think, as far as that's concerned, I want to aid every country to solve their own problems in all ways.
That would be the purpose of this organization.
But I am not going to commit American taxpayers here to a grandiose scheme here, in which a pouring billions of dollars, let's say, into India, which will ultimately be controlled by Nehru.
Well, now, the grandiose part of it needn't too much disturb us because we're involved in a grandiose operation now, the arms race. The biggest one, I take it.
And in addition to this arms race, you're now trying to add unseen billions in addition to that. Don't forget that it's not going to stop your arms race.
Well, that was precisely the question I was going to ask. Where do you stand? Does this come on top of the present arms program?
At present, you couldn't put it on top for a very good reason. Not the great reason you were given, where's the money coming from? Because that's always said just before somebody appropriates $10 billion. I don't know where it comes from, but it seems to come. Money's not the snarl. Things like steel are the snarl. We're running into shortages. Now, you couldn't start this program without tapering on arms.
And you cannot taper on arms
without destroying. The problem you've got is, what is your ratio between handling this problem with a quite different kind of weapons and handling national defense with arms? At present, I think we're busy losing allies because the ratio is too heavily weapons.
Well, I've said us to disagree on this point. It would be catastrophic. At the moment, we did not start this arms race. We demobilized.
Does it matter who started it?
Yes, it matters a great deal.
I know it matters morally, but I think it's a political problem.
No, it is a problem here. As long as our enemy, are heavily arming, then it is our duty to out-arm them. And throwing our billions of dollars here into wastelands in South America or India is not going to solve a military problem.
But isn't the program you're talking about likely to lead us straight into war?
Not the slightest bit. Not the slightest bit. I show you that if we simply have a firm, a vigorous, and a positive foreign policy, and a positive military policy, in which we can get into no involvement that we do not carry out. In other words, we should either withdraw from Korea completely and let the whole of Asia go communist, or we should fight them with our hands not tied behind us. We can win a victory, an easy military victory.
Well, I'm sorry, gentlemen, but our time is up. You've been listening to the Northwestern University Reviewing Star discussion, Is World War III Inevitable? Why not send now for a printed copy of today's broadcast with a list of books and articles about the subject discussed. Copies may be purchased for 10 cents in coin. A subscription to the Reviewing Stand costs just $1 for the next 4 months, $2.50 for an entire year. Write to the Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois. That address again, the Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois. Our guests today were Stringfellow Barr and William McGovern. Now our moderator, James H. McBurney, will tell you about next week's program.
Next week, the Reviewing Stand inaugurates the approach of Mental Health Week with a discussion of the question, are we emotionally prepared for today's world? Our guest will be the internationally known psychiatrist, John G. Menninger, secretary of the Menninger Foundation and past president of the American Psychiatric Association. Dr. Rudolph D. Noble, medical director of the Illinois Society for Mental Hygiene. And Helen Harris Perlman, associate professor in the School of Social Service Administration at the University of Chicago. We invite you to listen next week for a discussion. Are we emotionally prepared for today's world?
The Northwestern University Reviewing Stand is broadcast coast to coast every week as a public service feature of Mutual. Your announcer has been Jerry Coffer. This program has come to you from Chicago. This is the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System.